Hello, everyone. In this episode of our Uber Brands podcast, I talk to Oliver Brunschwiler, who is the quote-unquote lead link. Others might call it the CEO of Freitag. Freitag, obviously the company of messenger bag fame. This time, we're going to focus on how to build an Uber brand organizationally and operationally. So we're going to focus a lot of that and culture, but of course, we're also going to talk about brand building itself. I think you're going to much enjoy hearing about the unique ways of how Freitag does that. As you know, we're not interrupted by ads. So your ratings, reviews, likings, subscription is what makes us visible and keeps us alive on different platforms. If you could give us a rating or even a review, we thank you so much. And with that, enjoy.
Please listen carefully.
Hello and welcome everyone to this new episode of the Uber Brands podcast. The podcast in which we discuss brands that are desired beyond price, performance, or reason. Brands that seduce rather than sell, that add some myth to the material and shine from the inside out. We call them Uber brands, and we, that is your host, JP Kuhwein, and occasional co-host, Wolf Schaefer. And today I'm excited to have Oliver Brunschwiler on the phone. Oliver works for Freitag, the bag and accessory brand from Switzerland, and he is the lead link. Now, that is an unusual title, and we'll talk about that later on in the interview. It also says delegate of the board of directors. So definitely something to talk about when it comes to the organization. Thanks for coming on the show, Oliver.
Sure. Thanks for having me on the show.
Freitag has been a passion brand of ours. We think it absolutely is what we call an Uber brand. But for those who have not read the book, who live outside Europe, Korea, Japan, Southeast Asia, or under a stone, can you describe a little bit what Freitag is and what makes it special?
Well, Freitag was founded in the year 1993 by Daniel and Marcus Freitag. Daniel was a graphic designer and Marcus was a window decorator, so both creatives. And they had a personal need to transport their stuff, their books, their goods, their pens, with a solid bag. So while living in an apartment very close to a transit route in Zurich, they noticed that trucks were passing a bridge, and those trucks, they had a beautiful material which is called truck tarp. And they were thinking of what are these companies doing when the life of the truck tarp actually is over? So do they throw it away? What are they doing with it? So they were trying to find a used truck tarp and sew their first bag out of it.
And we should explain for the listeners in the US that in Europe and in many other countries, truck tarp is kind of the flexible fabric laminated plastic material that kind of wraps around the back of a truck or the hangar in the back. And so there's a ton of them driving around in Europe, right?
Exactly. There's millions. And that's a big difference compared to the US, where the US has solid trucks. Europe and a lot of other countries, they have so-called side curtains they have on their trucks. So it's a soft material, and it's because of weight. So the main reason they use that here is to reduce the weight in the transport, which is not so the case in the US because there's much more heavy load potential on the streets and the transit
routes. Right, gotcha. So what did they do with the tarp then?
So they found a very old, trash, slightly fucked up, used truck tarp. It's a term we still use, by the way. When it's slightly fucked up, it's something beautiful. Or as we also say, wabi-sabi, the beauty of imperfection. And so they made their first bag out of this. And in order to have a water protective, solid, unique looking bag, because each piece they cut out of this first tarp was unique. So there was no, There was no two products which were the same. And that kind of also hit the creative community in their environment at that time, which were all students. So they started to make more bags out of used truck tarps in their apartment. So it's typical garage startup story, but it happened in their apartment. So they washed their used truck tarps in their bathtub, and they sewed it with very old sewing machines in their apartment.
And this fasting forward became a very popular kind of messenger bag in the first Zurich, then Swiss, then kind of German country, then European. What kind of community should I say? Just students? I think it goes way beyond that, right?
Well, it was it attracted a lot of creative people because, as I said, it's every piece was unique and still is unique. So there's not many brands that can say they're producing unique products. They had graphics on them because when you cut the used truck tarp into different pieces, you see the graphics slightly sliced up. And so this creates a very special design and unique design for each product. And yes, you were right. So this was the first bag was a messenger bag. And actually, you can call them the founders of the classic messenger bag. It's also a product that is exhibited in the Museum of Modern Art in the permanent exhibition as a piece of history. And their test grounds, coincidentally, was San Francisco, because San Francisco was one of the first cities that there were many bike messengers, and so they tested that in San Francisco.
Oh, interesting. So the US was actually involved at the very beginning of the creation of the brand.
Totally.
Wow.
The US, is, in many things, it's a forerunner, but not in the use of of used materials.
Now, talking about used materials, so the attraction obviously is that it's a very beautiful, unique bag, that it's well designed, but there's also an environmental message. You talk a lot about reimagination, recycling. I think you have a special term for it. Can you tell us about that part, which seems to be more of a mission of the company?
Well, I think in general, before there was a circular economy as a term, or before there was a sustainability, which is probably one of the biggest buzzwords in the last 10 years, and it will probably remain one of the biggest buzzwords in the next 10 to maybe hopefully 50 years, the whole idea behind it was very sustainable and it was very circular. So circularity is key to all our values. And that's because of that initial idea, upcycling and recycling used materials. Beside the tarp, they were also using used bicycle inner tubes and used car seat belts. So these three ingredients were all actually used, and they recycled that into a bag.
And you go further. I mean, I visited your production facility, which has become kind of a pilgrimage site for, people who are into these kind of brands. And you also recycle rainwater for the washing. And I think you grow your own tomatoes on the roof and so on, right? So it goes beyond just the bag.
Yeah, these days, I mean, 25 years later, of course, we used the DNA that was created in 1993 to further expand the DNA into all kinds of circular thinking and circular acting while we are in business. So in every piece of the company, all elements, in every innovation, we always start to think circular. And so there's actually not one process that is not thought within the DNA of circular thinking.
Gotcha. Which brings me to, the founders are quite a quirky bunch there, brothers. I think you call them the bros. I would imagine it takes quite special kind of employees as well to work with them, to work for this brand. How do you attract, select, organize as a Freitag? Is it a special kind of creed?
Well, I think this is also something that purpose-driven companies, I think it's also a very trendy thing, but the purpose of Freitag is a very old purpose, and it's saying creating intelligent goods and services for urbanites and leading the way towards a circular future. So if you believe in this purpose, you are fitting to the company. That means we're not a totally green company, and people are also having fun while they work, and they're not fully sustainable in their private lives, but they have to believe in this purpose. So everything you do here is headed towards the purpose.
Right. And I understand it's not easy. I just talked to Patagonia recently at an event. They were telling us about kind of their initial struggles, for example, with finance as a necessary function, but not necessarily one that they knew how to integrate from the beginning into their culture. I've read and heard about Freitag struggling to define who should lead the company next to the brothers. Should there be a CEO or not? Can you tell us a little bit about where you are in this search and how you organize yourself right now?
Well, after many attempts of organizations and reorganizations, which probably a lot of companies go through when they're a young company, we had also, which is part of our DNA or the brothers' DNA, that they're not the classical leaders. So we always tried with classical hierarchical organizations, but we failed because we found out that efficiency is not the highest and talents will not surface in their best way if we have a hierarchic organization. So we were trying to find a way of organizing ourselves, and a couple of years ago we found Holacracy as a self-organization system, which is really like a system. So the main reason is to have talent surface and bring out the best for the company and not for their bosses. So that means it's not, there's no hierarchy because that's in the roles, but it's clearly written and very transparent for everybody. So everybody can see who is for what accountable. And my main role, or one of my main roles, is the lead link of the company. So that means I'm assigning other fitting people to other roles, and I'm only monitoring their fit, but I'm not telling them what to do. So they are self-responsible within the purpose of their role and their accountabilities towards the company's purpose and not towards me as the lead link of the company.
I understand. And so lead link has nothing to do with connecting to the outside of the company. In fact, it's focused inside, where you look to connect and to link up people who should work together based on what they declare they focus on in their work. Is that right?
Yes, and based on their potential skills. And potential is actually the key word here, because sometimes you hire people for a certain job, for a certain job description, and maybe you find out, or they find out, that there's other interests and talents around, they could be useful for the company. So we wanted to have an agile system of roles and circles, where we can assign people to other roles in other circles in order to get the best out of their talents and potential. This created a lot of momentum for the company, and talking about financial growth. So this actually
re-energized.
Re-energize the whole company also on the commercial side.
And in your job description, it also says delegate of the board of directors. I assume that includes the Freitag brothers. And what's the role of the directors?
This is just a translation we use for the outside world. So sometimes, depending on needs, when we negotiate with external partners, so they don't get our role system, we have to use classic old world titles and terms, so they can understand what our power is to negotiate with them or to deal with them in any way. So this is not something that we use internally, but the lead link is, if you want, so the delegate of the board, and translated into classic hierarchic old world, it's the delegate of the board of directors, or you can also translate this to the CEO. But in order to do that, there's other roles that me as a lead link will have to energize, and I have. So for example, I'm a strategic planner, so that declares exactly what I'm doing when I'm planning the strategy for the company. It's a process-oriented thing. It's a collaborative process to define strategy in my role, strategic planner. Or in one of my other roles, which is called creative direction, which I co-assign with four creative directors, it's exactly written what we should define in this role. So in the combination of all these roles, I could, for the external world, for LinkedIn, in my LinkedIn profile, I could totally write whatever powerful role I wanted in there. But for us internally, this is divided. So these are different roles. So I have many hats depending on the meeting. Sometimes I'm in a meeting as a strategic planner. Sometimes I'm in a meeting as a creative director. So we make a big difference there. So in order to have transparency and also a clear description of accountability, so we don't mix that up. So there's no like old power games around anymore.
Okay. Now the founders must still, or probably still, play a role as well. What is their role definitions? Can you give us an example there?
Yeah. For example, Daniel Freitag, he's an apostle in German. His accountability as an apostle is representing the brands for inspiring presentations, giving interviews, and making a concept for new presentations or keynotes. So this is also a role I am also assigned to. So there's different roles that they assign within the company. Or, for example, Marcus, I have to check in the system. I can, because there's a system for that. So sometimes I don't know, but I can see what they do. For example, he's an originator. As an originator, he will have to describe and visualize ideas and value propositions outside of the current business. And he also has to translate them for the Freitag crew, so they understand maybe what kind of diversification projects could be implemented in the company. So, okay. For example, this is just a little snippet of many roles. Also, the founders are energizing, as we call it, in the company.
Interesting. On the one hand, it seems weird that you need to look up what their description is. On the other hand, it might be a great idea to be able to have that at their fingertips. Maybe some people in classic organization would love to look up what people are working on before they go into a meeting. Let's move to the user side outside the company. Can you tell us a little bit about how the Freitag brand manifests itself to the market? I've been to Freitag Tower in Zurich, which reflects very much the mission of Freitag by being made out of recycled shipping containers. That's obviously your Freitag flagship. Can you tell us a little bit, how do you decide where to put a store or not? What is special about your stores in terms of their look and feel?
So, yeah, we run a certain set of principles, of brand principles, which are basically 36 different principles. It's like a recipe book to expand or grow the brand for employees and partners externally, internally, to have a certain visual or haptical set of recipes to transport the brand values.
And yeah. I actually have seen literally books or posters being attached to, let's say, recycling containers, desks, various shelves in the warehouse. You seem to have a very organized, maybe it's your Swiss DNA, maybe it's your design or design thinking DNA, a very organized way where you actually put it into books. There seem to be Bibles for everything at Freitag, is that right?
Yeah, no, there's actually only one Bible. So for example, there's principles, we say humility, we never lose our traction. Or we say industrial, because we were born industrial. Our look is influenced by the Swiss machine industry of the 1920s, invite anyone to take a look into our history and our production. The window to Freitag's soul. Quality and precision without kitsch. Form following function. Or we say installative, which you meant probably by the right order of things. So it would be a pity to leave chaos to coincidence. We orchestrate an organized mess, carefully arranged slackness, and every moment we do know what we do.
How often do you consult this Bible? You seem to have it handy next to you.
Pretty often. So, or irritating. We get attention by irritation because, for example, we don't do paid media. We don't do ads. So that means we depend on irritation because we're an independent company. We can do so. We polarize and with irony. So thanks to disruption, our message get heard then.
Uh-huh.
So we love the detail. Every big picture is made of many details. A little additional commitment can make all the difference. We're not satisfied before every detail is perfect. Yes, we're Swiss control freaks. Yes, you're right.
So to come back to the stores, then I guess you have a very deliberate approach in choosing them, in building them, in staffing them. Is that right?
Yeah, because as I said, we don't pay for reach. That means all our touch points in retail and distribution are actually our ad spaces too. So that means all these places must follow our brand principles, our brand identity, which of course develops, but there's some success drivers, like distributing unique products is complex. So you need a lot of space, because if you have one backpack model, you need to show 20 of them and not just one, because it's not a mass product. So we need a lot of space. So we had to develop our own shelf system that we multiply and expand and further develop. So this is all brand positioning elements and brand creating elements in our retail environment.
And at the same time, they totally reflect your equity, because they're quite ingenious in their design. They're made of carton. They create incredible density of product against a small wall. Nevertheless, I saw a video that you can build up a store in just hours, where it might take other retailers days to do it, because it's very handy and practical and people know how to put it together. And it's recyclable. These cartons, ideally, you leave them in the store. People don't get their bags in kind of a bulky carton that might be thrown away and all of that, correct?
Yeah, no, we don't do packaging, or we try to avoid packaging, because we use a used material, so it's rock solid. And it's already old, so we don't have to wrap it in 20 sheets of paper or plastics. So that's a big advantage, of course, in order to leave away the whole packaging trash.
We were just talking before the podcast, you've spread across Europe. When I went to Zurich, I mean, it feels like every other bag is Freitag, but you've also branched out significantly into Asia, leading with Japan, but then, you know, China, Thailand, Southeast Asia in general, Korea, you name it. What is it you think that attracts particularly the Asian audience? Is it for the same reasons as the European ones, which is this kind of recycling chic, or are there different motives and different feeling of belonging with your Asian customers?
It's a good thing you're asking, because that's something we also question ourselves still. But the main motive in most Asian countries is the uniqueness. It's the not mass product and the design on the unique products. That's the main motive to collect. So there is hundreds and thousands of people that collect Freitag bags, because you have to hunt them. You have to hunt them through the online store. You have to hunt them in certain stores. People travel around the world and visit stores to hunt the products, because you never know what pops up where and when. And this is something where a lot of Asians created a strong buzz around the brand. So their main motive, coming to the point, is probably not our core of the DNA, which is circular thinking, and sustainability, but it's the design of the unique product.
This is interesting because it gets me to the same discussion we had with Patagonia, which is you realize that maybe quite a significant portion of your followers, of your fans, of the people who spread the word of mouth might not necessarily be doing it and buying your product for the reasons you would like them to, right? You would like them to be environmentally aware, not to throw away things, not to create unnecessary carbon footprint, whatever it might be. It sounds very similar to Patagonia. And then you maybe shockingly discover that people buy it for the fashion, they buy it for the design. They might even fly around and create CO2 just to hunt down your bag, and they collect them and store them versus using them. They certainly don't recycle them. How do you feel about that? Is that a conflict, or do you say, no, you know, it generates business and it's for the overall good. We'll spread our message with their money.
We are very happy with the situation, because after a certain become friends, as we call them, and not customers, they find out how it's done. So we always start with why, we internally, and they start with the how or with the what. So they see the what is the product, unique, and they jump on it and they hear this is a hot brand. So it's a fashion item and they hunt, not very sustainable, but then they find out how it's made. And when they get this step, they usually come to the third step, which is why is this brand actually here and hot? It's not because just of the design unique, that it's also because of their strong circle of thinking, ambition to be a leader in this field. So they wanted to become a co-leader in this. So it's a very slow process of a lot of customers and collectors when they suddenly get to the point where they think, okay, this influences my behavior because I got the brand now, finally. And they even got more triggered, get more triggered for us. I have a good example. This today, there were like three Thai girls in our factory store shopping for bags. Very well-dressed, very attractive, higher buying power, more over average buying power from Thailand. So they were like buying bags there. And so I asked them, why are they buying so many bags? And they said, oh, you know, we got friends now. They collect, of course. So they're shopping for their friends that collect in Thailand. They cannot import, or importing is very expensive. So they travel and they collect something. So she showed me pictures of their friends, and they were all on a bicycle. So in Thailand, you actually don't see a lot of bicycles in Bangkok. So there's many cars and huge traffic problems and problems for the environment. And so they were all on their bicycles. And I was like, that's not a good match. Is he your boyfriend? She's like, yeah, this was his first bicycle, because he saw that these were actually messenger bags. So they're changing their transport behavior just because they're now Freitag fans. So I think this is just a start, you know, but we cannot be unhappy if people buy and hunt Freitag bags, as long as they understand what this is made and how this is made. And this is also, of course, one of our messages that we have to leave when we sell bags.
But there is a missionary, almost religious part to your mission, if I understand right, where you do hope, in fact, you try to encourage that people would change their thinking and ideally their behaviors around preservation of resources, around choosing bicycle as a transportation, if possible, etc. Is that correct? Or is that just a side item, a nice to have, this aspect of education?
It's more pain to change your lifestyle in order to be a little greener. So let's try to have fun with good design. And that's also our daily work. And that's also our mission. So we don't have to tell the people, oh, you know, let's all turn green and then, you know, all do good stuff. So first of all, you have to be very close to your personal needs and you have to fulfill them, which is...
So I could say you appeal to the heart and the desires before you might engage the brain and the mind, but it comes in via fulfilling the needs and the desires first to open people's minds afterwards.
Yes, exactly.
Gotcha. Wow, the time is running fast here. Unfortunately, I already need to move to our last questions, but I was curious, does Freitag as a company and organization get a little bit bored after 30 years or so of sewing bags from recycled materials? I see that you're starting to do fashion with kind of biodegradable jeans. I saw just recently you start to integrate PET bottle recycling. How do you think about evolving your mission? How do you keep people engaged? Is there a kind of a fatigue factor that you need to deal with, and how do you deal with it?
No, we're not bored, not at all. It gets even more interesting as we grow, because operational-wise, it's a very complex way to recycle goods in a certain amount. And this is very interesting for all employees. Still, using the base materials of the used truck tire, which is not a friendly material, it's oil-based, but at least we give it a second life. Expanding this with new materials and mixing this with new materials, for example, PET, which is also nothing new, is very interesting, design-wise.
Yes.
And then there's the organic cycle of materials, which we closed a couple of years ago. The only thing we tried to find is clothing for our workforce, and we couldn't find anything that we liked. So we started to develop our own materials, our own textiles. And we said, let's try to make this cradle to cradle. We ended up making our own clothing with it, but we just actually wanted to prove that this is possible. So this is not business diversification at first point. This is just, as I sometimes say when I do tours in the factory, our main hobby,
right?
To show that this is possible. And of course, we get a lot of requests and a lot of companies in the last couple of years since we started that, heading towards this direction.
I just read the fashion industry is the biggest CO2 provider, if you like, even before all of transportation, just all the fashion, the fast fashion in particular, that is being thrown away, that is being burned, often new because it's just excess stock that was quickly produced for the season but didn't get sold off. So fashion is actually an enormous cause of pollution.
Exactly. But we as a small, still small company from Zurich, we didn't have the ambition to change the world. We just want to prove for ourselves because we can afford. So we're all self-financed, so we don't finance ourselves out by banks. So that means all profits go back into developments and innovations in the company, which is also one of the drivers for many employees to work here. So this was one of the projects we still invest, and we will further invest in this to find out if we, with our own brand, can expand this idea, this innovation. Do we want that? Because distribution, for example, is a completely different field of play. So this is in our internal incubation mode, if I can say so.
Unfortunately, we're already running out of time. I know from my lectures at university, from our talks, that every time, invariably, there are tons of people who become interested in Freitag, which is a good thing for you and your mission, I guess. Can you tell our listeners what's the easiest way to dive into the world of Freitag? Do they need to log on and go to your website? Is that freitag.ch?
Yeah, that's .ch. And whenever you visit Switzerland, if you listen, you are invited to a factory tour.
Oh, wow. That's a super offer. So there will be a code. Überbrands will be your secret code to do a factory tour, which I can tell you, having done it, is really special. So thanks so much, Oliver, for being on the show. It was fantastic.
Sure.
And you, dear listener, you can always reach us, and that is at info@überbrands.com. And as you know, that's spelled with a U-E, as it should be. Tell us what you like, tell us who you want to hear, tell your friends about us, and rate us on iTunes, Stitchers, and so on, so this show keeps going.